It's Central Time. I'm Rob Ferris. You're with us here on the Ideas Network. Coming up, we take a look at the Canadian side of the growing rift over trade and tariffs, and we'll preview our special international call-in program airing this Sunday on Wisconsin Public Radio. First, the eight Democratic candidates for governor squared off in a primary debate last night at UW-Milwaukee. TMJ4 News and WUWM co-produced the debate, which looked into issues including the Foxconn technology plant, education, and criminal justice reform. It's the first chance all the candidates had to debate each other as they try to stand out in a crowded field, and while there was some agreement on big issues, some differences did come up. Sean Johnson is WPR's Capital Bureau Chief. Sean, welcome back.
Hey, Rob.
Well, this was a chance for candidates to stand out, and as we've seen in polls, there's not a lot of name recognition for any of them in some cases.
Yeah, I mean, it was their first chance to do this on TV, I guess, because they've been doing a variety
of local forums
throughout the state, and a lot of them have gotten to know each other pretty well throughout this at this point, but if you look at early polling, a lot of people don't know who these candidates are or who they would support. And so this is their first chance to go out on TV and radio and say, here is the one unique thing that unique reason you should vote for me in a minute or less.
What was the tone at this debate?
The tone was fast, I guess. It just kind of had that feeling of being fast because they really did only hang on an answer for about a minute apiece per candidate. And not only that, the moderators didn't stick on the same topic. So, for example, to open the debate, they talked about Foxconn, and they had a show of hands question, who supported the Foxconn deal, who would kill it, who would renegotiate it. And then they went to talk to the candidates. They asked Tony Evers about Foxconn. They asked Matt Flynn about Foxconn. They are in alphabetical order across the stage. So they got the Foxconn question, and then they moved on. So, I mean, that was kind of the debate in an effort to keep it fresh with that many candidates. They didn't linger on a question.
Well, we want to hear a little bit of each of the candidates' answers, just a taste from all of them. Let's start with the issue of Foxconn and hear from a few of the candidates. Here's one of them, attorney Matt Flynn, talking about how he would challenge the Foxconn deal.
I will go to federal court. An illegal contract is unenforceable in Wisconsin. This is an illegal contract because it's a private bill that exempts them from our wetlands. It exempts them from environmental impact statements. It even exempts them from our Court of Appeals jurisdiction.
Candidate Matt Flynn there. Now here's Madison Mayor Paul Soglin on whether big business incentives are the way to attract companies and jobs.
The creation of great quality jobs comes from small businesses. It does not come and states suffer terribly when they get into a race to the bottom, handing out these hundreds of millions, billions of dollars in public money where we take the risk and they take the profit.
Paul Soglin there. Now here's Firefighter Union Chief Malin Mitchell talking about how to ensure that the jobs at Foxconn are accessible to people in Milwaukee and Racine.
We need to set up a regional transit authority. If we're going to have Foxconn come in here and pay $4.5 billion, and we're going to pay them $4.5 billion to actually do business here in the state of Wisconsin, we need to make sure that those that are underemployed and those that are unemployed can get to those jobs.
Sean, did we hear any pro-Foxconn cases from the eight Democratic candidates?
You didn't hear pro-Foxconn when they did the show of hands on who opposes the deal. I guess everybody opposed it. What you did hear, though, is Tony Evers was one of only two candidates who said that he wouldn't kill the deal if elected. And when he was pressed on this a little bit later in the candidate question and answer section, Tony Evers said, quote, I can't sit up here and tell the people of Wisconsin this isn't going to happen. We're already there. And we have to make sure, since we're already there, that the people of Wisconsin are treated fairly and then we don't make the same mistake again. So Tony Evers saying this Foxconn thing is happening and he's not going to tell people otherwise.
Education was another component of the debate. Here's more from the candidates on that. Here's former head of the Wisconsin Democracy Campaign, Mike McCabe, on the state's voucher system for private schools.
Wisconsin should stop trying to fund two separate and parallel systems of education. I think we should eliminate taxpayer-subsidized private schooling, the voucher program.
And now State Senator Kathleen Vineout talked about how she would make up for tuition freezes and cuts in the UW system.
I would bring back the money that was taken away. I would put $100 million into needs-based financial aid. I also have a bill that would fully fund the free tuition for two-year in-tech colleges for the two-year UW campuses.
And State Superintendent Tony Evers, he works in the education part of the state right now. He had a different take on whether two-year and technical colleges should be tuition-free.
I believe students should have some skin in the game. Any student that is so impoverished that they can't afford to go to college, of course they're going to get some grants. But the bottom line is I think there should be some skin in the game for kids going to college.
So did we hear really distinctive statements from candidates there? I mean, we heard a difference, at least between Finehout and Evers, on that free tuition issue.
Yeah, the free tuition issue is another one of those show of hands questions where they asked, do you support free tuition at tech schools? And 7 of the 8 candidates said yes. Evers was the only one who said no, I don't. And he actually came back later in the debate to point out, hey, since we didn't get to talk about this, I want to explain myself. And that's where he gave that skin in the game remark there. So that was another situation where you saw Evers, who in the early polling on this race, even though a lot of people don't know who they're going to vote for, Evers has led in the polls that have been released publicly. And so he's kind of striking that a general election tone there where he's not going for every issue that the other candidates are going for in this competitive Democratic primary.
Talking to WPR's Sean Johnson about last night's debate among the 8 Democratic primary candidates in the race for governor. Moving on and hearing from a couple more candidates, criminal justice reform and the state's prison population also came up. Here's Attorney Josh Pade talking about allowing the expungement of crimes on a person's record to take place after sentencing.
Hope to people that have did something bad in their life or were incriminated and they came out, it shouldn't be determined at that point. It should be determined as they get rehabbed into society.
And then former State Representative Kelda Royce on her goal of reducing the state's prison population by half.
As governor, I will look to our neighboring state of Minnesota. They incarcerate fewer than half as many people as we do, and yet they're no more dangerous. In fact, they're actually investing in public safety.
Is this something that candidates have been talking about a lot outside of the debate, even the criminal justice issue, Sean?
There have been a lot of forums. There have been some forums that have been organized specifically around this idea of what to do with the criminal justice system. And you do seem to see a lot of agreement among the candidates that what's happening right now is not working and that they want to take varying approaches to reduce the prison population. You know, a few of them have signed on to the idea that we need to legalize marijuana to reduce the number of people who are behind bars for, you know, recreational drug use. So this is an area where there's, if you're looking for big differences among the candidates, you might not find it when you're talking about criminal justice and the state's prison population.
Now, given the limited time for the candidates and a lot of issues, as we heard, they covered, how much did they talk about the current governor, the person they're hoping to run against in November?
I mean, he was the subject of some zingers, for sure. Again, when you only have a little bit of time in a debate like this, one way that you can make your time count if you're a candidate is to try to get that quote that's going to make the evening news or the morning news or the newspaper. And so you heard some of that. Malin Mitchell talked about the governor being two walkers, that there's a governor walker who legislates and governs one way and a candidate walker who's now acting like he's a moderate Republican. You know, that was the type one of the, I guess, walker attacks you heard. Paul Soglin kind of led into the governor saying, quote, "We'd like to know what he was smoking when he negotiated this deal," talking about the Foxconn deal. So the governor, yes, was a punching bag in this, you know, this debate. Although I wouldn't say that every candidate really lit into him. And there were some examples where they kind of went after each other, though not as strongly as they did the governor.
And did they position themselves all in terms of national issues, the Supreme Court nomination going on? Obviously, President Trump gets a lot of attention, even in local and state races. Did that come up much at all?
Kelda Royce brought it up. She's a former Democratic state rep from Madison and said that if President Trump gets his pick on the Supreme Court, there's a very good chance the court will overturn Roe v. Wade. And if that happens, Wisconsin has a criminal abortion ban on the books that would go into effect without Roe v. Wade. So she has said that if she's governor, she'd work to overturn that law. But if that can't happen, she would pardon anyone arrested under that law.
I understand a new Marquette University Law School poll is coming out next week, I think. That's the one everybody in the media anyway and politics watchdogs are looking out for. What kind of things are you going to be watching for in that poll when it comes to this race?
Well, next week's just a huge week in terms of the horse race of the politics of this. You got the Marquette poll and you have fundraising numbers coming out next week, too, for all the candidates. And they're going to give you an idea of who's sort of viable in this home stretch here, who might have the money to run ads, who might be able to close a gap. I guess the big thing you'll be looking for is if anything has changed with Tony Evers at the top of that poll. There are still a lot of it, or there were in the last Marquette poll, still a lot of undecided voters, enough undecided voters that they could break to a candidate and overtake Evers if that were to happen. But at least so far, he's been kind of the front runner in every poll that's been released by a campaign or by Marquette.
Briefly, as we wrap up, Sean, I don't like to throw around the word unprecedented, but we don't have a lot of roadmaps for an 8-candidate primary in Wisconsin.
You don't. And so you don't have to get to a large number to win, a large percentage of the vote to win. And so that's what makes this race, I guess, hard to peg.
Fun for politics nerds.
It is fun for somebody who likes to watch this stuff. And on election night, primary election night, August 14th, there will be a lot of wondering, you know, where we should be watching and, you know, what that critical threshold is.
And I believe we'll be sitting here along with Frederica Freiberg on that election night, figuring out what just happened. Sean, thanks a lot for joining us.
Thanks, Rob.
That's Sean Johnson, WPR's Capitol Bureau Chief. He was breaking down last night's primary debate between the state's Democratic candidates for governor. Lots of them. The United States is in the midst of back-and-forth tariffs with trading partners, including our neighbors to the north in Canada. This Sunday from 3 to 5 in the afternoon, Wisconsin Public Radio and our Canadian colleagues at the CBC will host an international call-in program on trade and tariffs. You can join in right now on our callback line at 833-424-3327. That's 833-424-IDEAS. Do you approve of President Trump's tariffs, including steel and aluminum tariffs on Canada and other allies? What do you think of the way the president is handling trade issues? Who do you support more on these issues, Prime Minister Trudeau of Canada or President Trump of the United States? And if you work in an industry that's been affected by international trade or you're worried about tariffs on things like dairy, motorcycles, and more, call and share your story. The number is 833-424-3327. I'll co-host the conversation with Duncan McHugh, host of CBC Radio 1's Cross Country Checkup. He joins me now for a preview. Duncan, welcome to Central Time.
Hi, Rob.
Well, why did you all at the CBC reach out to us here in Wisconsin for this project on tariffs?
Well, after your President Trump had a bit of a spat with our Prime Minister Justin Trudeau at the G7 summit in Quebec a few weeks ago, our Prime Minister announced retaliatory tariffs. And he said at that time, Canadians, you know, we're polite, but we're not going to be pushed around here. And in the days after that, politicians of all political stripes in Canada seem to line up behind that approach. And so I host this weekly phone-in show that goes right across the coast-to-coast-to-coast in Canada, and that was the topic of the week. But it seemed when we were talking about it that Canadians were all kind of speaking from the same page on this, that yes, you know, we need to get tough to deal with President Trump's approach on trade. We did have a couple of American callers, though, and we have American listeners, and it was really interesting to hear Americans' perspective on how these trade measures are impacting them and how our prime minister is doing. And so we got off the air and said, you know, we'd like to hear more of that. We'd like to hear from American callers about what they think about U.S. President Trump's Make America Great Again approach to trade. And lo and behold, we're going to be heading to Wisconsin to visit you guys.
And I'm looking forward to this. We're going to be talking to some experts and politicians on both sides of the border, but I'm really looking forward to hearing our callers and your callers, if I can divide us that way, weighing in together on this.
Yeah, I think it's really important that people get outside of their own filter bubbles and echo chambers. And so it's really easy for Canadians to say, okay, we're not going to get pushed around here, but here's the reality. I mean, the United States is by far our biggest trading partner. And likewise, to the United States, Canada is important when it comes to trade. I mean, there's $450 billion worth of goods that are going back and forth across our borders right now. And what I have learned is that, you know, Canada is an important, the top destination for Wisconsin's exports. And so I think it's really important that we sit down and start to talk about how this escalating trade dispute is impacting us.
As you listen to your listeners and just look in the news in general, is this trade story, this tariff war, the top issue? Is this the big thing everybody's talking about?
I think it's slowly starting to sink in. I mean, you know, when we did our discussion, obviously the focus with our Canadian listeners was on steel and aluminum because that's where this whole, you know, trade dispute erupted. And we are hearing, you know, fear, genuine fear from some steel mills in places like Hamilton and Sault Ste. Marie in Ontario about what the impact is going to be on jobs. But also, you know, we're hearing from pulp mills, for example. There's a big tariff, 32% tariff on pulp right now. And so, you know, like a security worker at a pulp mill in a place like Cornerbrook, Newfoundland phones in and says, I'm worried about my job, right? Like this, we need to, the politicians need to sort these things out because, you know, this may kill our mill and the whole town depends on it. So, you know, it's definitely starting to do more than just percolate. You know, these are starting to hit home in the wallets of Canadians. And as I understand, talking with you folks at WPR, it's starting to hit home in the wallets and pocketbooks of Americans as well.
Definitely. We're hearing from cheesemakers. We just this week talked to the head of one Wisconsin cheese company that does a lot of exporting, worried in part about the tariffs themselves, but also about the uncertainty. What is the next shoe to drop? If we're making 3-year cheddar, is anybody going to be buying it in another country 3 years from now when it's ready to ship? Are you seeing that sense of uncertainty up there, not just today's tariffs themselves?
I'll politely say that everything with your president right now is pretty uncertain. So, you know, it's hard to know where this is headed. You know, again, we have had such a close trading relationship for quite a while now since the NAFTA agreement was first signed. And you know, renegotiation of NAFTA, Canadians have been expecting that. Since President Trump was a candidate and then became president. But boy, you know, there is an awful lot of uncertainty now and people saying, listen, if the United States isn't going to be our biggest trading partner, then should we be looking elsewhere right now? And those kinds of discussions are starting to happen.
We're talking to Duncan McHugh, host of CBC Radio 1's Cross Country Checkup. He's going to join us here in Wisconsin Sunday afternoon for a special call-in on issues of tariffs and trade in the United States and in Canada. Hopefully you'll join us Sunday from 3 to 5 with your thoughts. Duncan, President Trump, I think whether people like him or not, everybody agrees he is a news generator. He makes a lot of stories happen, and that, to the extent that tariffs aren't the dominant story here, it's because of other stories that he's at the center of. Immigration, NATO this week, U.S. Supreme Court justice nominee. Do you feel that feverish pace of news coming up from south of your borders up there?
Yeah, absolutely. And he does, you know, certainly dominate the news agenda right around the world. But I think that's one of the important things about us having this conversation on the air, about trade in particular, because, you know, it's easy to focus on sensational Twitter sparring, but I think it's really important, and particularly as public broadcasters, that we provide our listeners with good solid information and good solid facts. And so, you know, I think that we should be providing our listeners with an opportunity to really assess, beyond angry tweeting, how this is impacting people and their economic livelihoods.
Has trade been a political issue in elections in Canada in recent years? Because I'll back up a bit. I grew up near the Canadian border. I remember seeing ads on Canadian TV when NAFTA was coming along, showing a pencil eraser erasing the border between the United States and Canada, mm-hmm. Fears of loss of sovereignty. We, in our presidential election in 2016, the Trans-Pacific Partnership and NAFTA were issues because of President Trump and Senator Bernie Sanders. is this a hot issue when people are running for office in Canada?
I have to say, I mean, back when NAFTA was first signed, it was the election issue in that era. But over and fears about getting swamped by the United States have always been on Canada's minds, whether it's Canadians' minds, whether it's economically or particularly culturally. So, you know, it's on Canadians' minds, but Canadians have gotten used to NAFTA over the years and have really grown to see the benefits of lowering the borders, not only with the United States, but with Mexico as well. And obviously, there will always be problems and spats when it comes to trade and economics. But no, I mean, it hasn't. It's not kind of front and center. Our relationship with the Americans, every election for Canadians, because in a lot of ways, we just take it for granted.
On a personal note, as we start to wrap up, I understand this will be your first visit to Wisconsin. Is that right?
It will be. I'm certainly looking forward to that.
Anything you want to make sure you do while you're here? And you're going to be busy. We're going to be working on this show. If we can show you around to one thing in our local area here, what would you want to check out in Wisconsin? Or maybe on a future trip?
So I learned about Harley-Davidson, of course. And so you got to show me a Harley. Well, home of the Harley-Davidson. I mean, we got to go for a ride, you and me.
Yeah, I'll get back to you on that one. I can definitely promise we can supply some cheese to you really far more easily.
We'll go milk a cow somewhere?
Yes, we'll bring them into the studio. Well, we always have them in the studio here, being Wisconsin. I mean, it's not I think it's a legally, it's an FCC requirement.
I'm looking forward to it, Rob.
Well, Duncan, good talking to you now, and we'll talk to you again on Sunday.
See you on Sunday.
That's Duncan McHugh, host of CBC Radio 1's Cross Country Checkup. He and I will co-host an international call-in on trade and tariffs this Sunday from 3 to 5. You can listen in on both Wisconsin Public Radio Networks or WPR.org. You can join the conversation, get a head start right now on our callback line, 833-424-3327. Which leader is doing a better job on trade, Trump or Trudeau? Has the Canada-U.S. relationship changed? Should there be a Canada-U.S. trade war, or do you want to see it avoided? Call 833-424-3327 and share your thoughts. It's Food Friday. While peak berry season is pretty short, if you do a little planning ahead, you can have great-tasting berries throughout the year. Many people have traditions of heading to the berry patch with family or friends, maybe finding some in the wild or the backyard, or picking them up at the farmer's market. Do you cook with berries or preserve them in jams or jellies or freeze them for future use? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234 or post on the Ideas Network Facebook page. Chef Dave Heide owns two restaurants, Liliana's in Fitchburg, named for his daughter, and Charlie's on Main in Oregon, named for his son. A graduate of Le Cordon Bleu, he's worked at a Michelin-starred restaurant in California, as well as several restaurants in the Madison area. Chef Dave, welcome back to Central Time.
Well, thanks so much for having me back, you guys.
Well, I've got childhood memories of we had a mulberry tree in the backyard and a raspberry patch, and when the seasons overlapped, you can make a meal out of them. Do you have any of those childhood berry memories yourself?
Yeah, I do. In fact, one of my favorite berry picking experiences was I grew up in Fitchburg, which is right where Liliana's was. And right down the road where now Star Cinema is, that used to be a huge berry field with nothing but strawberries. So we'd always go wild strawberry picking there. And my favorite current memory is when Liliana was young, going and picking raspberries, and it was always one for the box and then three for her and then one for the box and then trying to have to guesstimate how many we actually ended up buying.
Do you have a favorite berry to cook with? That's a lot of what we're going to talk about today. A lot of times it's fun to just eat them, of course, but do you have a favorite berry to put in dishes?
In terms of cooking and the cooking part, I definitely say raspberries because they're the most diverse. They've got the tartness to it that really bodes well with savory cooking, and it's not as much just about the sweet part, but strawberries do well, but black, like raspberries for sure are my favorite.
And you mentioned savory, and I think we're going to talk some about desserts, and that's something that, you know, you kind of just naturally do. Oh, there's some berries, throw them on some ice cream or something like that. Make the case for using berries in our savory cooking.
Yeah, that's great. You know, so many times when people think berries, they think dessert, they think breakfast, they think on top of like French toast, but you know, berries and savory, I think, pair well, mostly when we're cooking with things like proteins, like pork or chicken or whatnot. We tend to only think about those savory components, those herbal components, and being able to bring in that kind of tartness and the sweetness, a little bit of sour, can really help complement and offset kind of the umami flavor that you get from the earthy part of meat.
And one recipe you wanted to tell us about today is blackberry pork tenderloin with citrus risotto. So how do the blackberries fit in with all that?
Well, so, you know, anytime that you're using fresh fruit with savory, I always like to either cook it down a little bit and then add some mounted butter at the end. So when you mount butter, it gives it this really creamy finish. So mounting basically means you don't let the butter break. So if I take butter and I bring it up to a boil in a liquid, eventually the oil will separate and you'll get this really greasy float on top. Mounting butter just means whisking it in over medium high heat so that the butter kind of creams into the dish you're making.
Now, what happens when it sounds like mixing that fat with the berry, like a slightly acidic berry, something special happens there that I've never tried to do myself? What's going on?
Well, it takes the kind of super acidicness away from the berry, and it helps them more complement instead of being just a big kind of in-your-face flavor.
So if we're going to do this with now this pork tenderloin and citrus risotto, we've prepared the berries with that mounted butter. I've already learned a new thing today. And then how does that end up getting in with the pork tenderloin?
So what I would do there is I would sear off the whole pork tenderloin by itself and then cut it into little medallions. And a citrus risotto, it doesn't mean you're juicing lemons, limes, oranges, and grapefruits, but taking the zest from those and kind of folding that into a really beautiful kind of creamy risotto gives you that bright freshness of the risotto, and then the kind of umami rich smoky roasted flavor of that pork tenderloin, and then finishing it off with bringing that brightness back with the blackberries.
Now I would think I probably wouldn't want to do anything where the berries are cooking forever. It seems like, you know, they're kind of a delicate taste in some way. I would just lose it if I'm baking them or sauteing them for a long time. Am I right?
Yes and no. You know, it depends. The biggest risk you have when you cook berries for too long is that the sugar will over caramelize and you can end up kind of getting this burned scorched flavor. So cooking it on really low heat for a while won't really tear it apart, but yeah, cooking it over like low to medium heat and not just cooking the stuff out of them is great.
It's Food Friday. We're cooking with berries with Chef Dave Heide, owner of a couple of restaurants in the Madison area. You can join in if you've been outstanding in your berry patch. 800-642-1234. It's 800-642-1234. I'll ask you about a mystery to me a little bit. I see currants on sale, black, red, white currants, and we get them on our CSA. And my technique for cooking with currants is I give them to people who I know like currants, because I don't know what the heck to do with them.
Sure. Well, currants are kind of tricky because they're a really mild flavor. They don't have a ton of acidity. They don't have a ton of sweetness. They just are kind of like a tart grape, you know, in terms of texture. So what I really like to do is just kind of muddle them. They actually go great in cocktails too. Ooh. So you can muddle them with like a little bit of fresh sugar, a little bit of rum, a little bit of fresh basil or fresh mint, and you end up with this really beautiful like summer cocktail, and they go great.
And how about in food? We can drink our currants, and that's great.
How about the best dessert ever is a cocktail, in my personal opinion.
And how about eating them? What could we cook with them?
And I don't know as much for, you know, with cooking with currants, you know, you can make a good, like, currant jam. But I tend to like them just, again, kind of, like, muddled and put over, like chicken, kept in kind of more, their more whole form, because there's not a lot to them. Anything you add to them will kind of take away from them. If you are making a jam, though, make sure you add some acidity to it as well and a little bit of salt into your jam, because it'll help bring out the flavor of the currant.
Salt in the jam.
Yes. Yeah. So anytime people think about sweet, they tend to only think about sugar. But the most important ingredient in sweet cooking is adding salt, because salt is a flavor enhancer. It brings out all the flavor. So if you have a dessert without salt, it tends to be a little lacking and just kind of cloyingly sweet.
Oh, so that's why we're getting all this salted caramel and stuff like that out there.
It's ironic.
Which is awesome. I love it.
Well, it's great, though, because I think it's funny because salted caramel, all caramel is salted. Like, if it isn't salted, then it wasn't really caramel to begin with. So it's like saying watered water. You know, it should be salted to begin with. But I think it's more trendy. Like, it's something that's like, ooh, salted caramel. That's different than regular caramel.
Well, but it seems like they're putting maybe extra salt on it.
Yeah, like sometimes they put salt, like a little like flaked sea salt on or something like that. But that doesn't have really, all caramel should have salt in it.
All right, now I'm seeing this time of year, I think people are out strawberry picking. I haven't done it myself yet this year. I've been making the blood sacrifice to get raspberries in mosquito season.
Oh my gosh, the mosquitoes are horrible this year.
I'm not going to spray up for the 2 minutes of raspberry picking, but I digress. All right, strawberries.
Yes.
Obviously, we could throw them on a shortcake or something like that. Can we get strawberries in savory cooking?
Oh, yeah, you can. Although strawberries, for me, I love... I love, my favorite way, period, is you take a really great pound cake, a really dense, wonderful cake, put some nice butter on it, and then grill it. So you get these really kind of smoky grill marks with it. And then I macerate the strawberries. So macerating is just taking the strawberries, chopping up a little bit, putting some sugar on them, and that sugar will actually break down the kind of structure and wall of the strawberry. And you end up with this kind of like light, fresh strawberry kind of on-the-fly jam that you can put on top.
You had me at butter-fried pound cake.
Perfect. I mean, how can you not like it?
Let's go to our callers at 800-642-1234. Rod is with us in Arlington. Rod, hi.
Yeah, hi. How you doing today? Thanks for taking my call.
Yeah, what do you want to give us, Rod?
I want to give you something. My wife, I only get about two a year because of the seasoning, and that is strawberry rhubarb pie.
Ooh, okay. And your wife makes this? You're a big fan?
Oh, gosh. I wish we had fresh strawberries and rhubarb year-round. That would be, like, my favorite. It's She takes rhubarb fresh out of our garden, gets fresh strawberries when they start to come in. Can only maybe get two or three year tops because we don't have a lot of rhubarb in the garden. But she mixes that together, a little bit of sugar, and makes almost like a custard when it bakes down. You definitely got to put a pan under it because it really boils over as it bakes. It's just the most awesome, sweet, tart flavor you ever tasted.
Rod, thank you so much for sharing that. We have a monster rhubarb plant by my compost bin. It really likes it there. So I do get to use a lot of rhubarb. Any thoughts on souping up that strawberry rhubarb pie, Dave, or does it sound like they're on target there?
I love it just the way he said, but also throwing a little bit of fresh grated ginger in there will make it that nice little pop. It'll give it a little bit of spice in there, too. And then sometimes try mixing it up instead of doing just the traditional pie crust. Do the pie crust down below and then make up like a nice crumble on top that you can mix with some cinnamon, oats, flour, and butter, and some brown sugar until it kind of forms a paste and a crumble, and crumble that on top. And then you get like more of a textural component with it too. And then, you know, one thing I will say, one of the things I really try to advocate for is that buying local is really great, but especially when things are in season. It drives me nuts going to a grocery store and seeing California strawberries and people picking those, even though we're right in the heart of like a strawberry season or a raspberry season. And they taste so much better when they're local.
Yeah, I do like, I mean, I'll eat strawberries year round if I can find them, but that is something that you really notice the difference on.
Really, and you know they taste starchy and kind of pithy when you get them out of season, and getting them in season where they just kind of melt in your mouth when you can chew them with your tongue. That's how you know you got a great strawberry.
Talking to Chef Dave Heide, chef and owner of Liliana's in Fitchburg and Charlie's on Main in Oregon. On Food Friday, we're talking about summer berries. Recipes to try, what to do with them, and we want to hear from you at 800-642-1234. Do you have a favorite memory of picking berries, eating and cooking with berries, and what do you like to do with your fresh berries? We'll take anything from eating them right off the plant to preserving them, freezing them, cooking with them, savory or sweet. Or do you have questions for Dave about how to get the most out of your berries that are in season right now? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. You can also post on the Ideas Network Facebook page. We heard from Deborah there. She says she likes to use them in her cereal, her cobbler, sure, and her smoothies. We'll pick up the conversation, maybe hear from you coming up on Central Time. It's Food Friday. We're talking to Chef Dave Heide, who runs two restaurants in the Madison area, Liliana's in Fitchburg, Charlie's on Main in Oregon. He's joining us today to talk about how to use the fresh berries in season right now, maybe at your local market, maybe in your local backyard. You can join in at 800-642-1234. What's your favorite kind of berry this time of year? Do you have a favorite recipe, dinner or dessert? Do you grow your own? And do you have questions about what to do with them? Call 800-642-1234 or post on the Ideas Network Facebook page. Back to your calls now. Allison is with us in Manitowoc. Allison, hi.
Hi there. I love the show. I'm wondering, I have three huge mulberry trees, and I never know what to do with the mulberry. I'll hang up and listen for the answer.
Now, I will say before you answer, Chef Dave, I grew up, as I said, with a mulberry tree in the backyard, and I love finding them in the middle of cities. And I've had, you know, being a small town kid in cities, I'm sitting there eating mulberries right off the tree, and people make fun of me. Or it has happened. People have mocked this guy eating berries, random berries off the tree. The tricky thing about mulberries is it doesn't seem like they keep much longer than it takes to get them from the tree to your mouth.
And they also super seedy, you know, so yeah, you get a lot of seeds with mulberries and they have, and they do tend to get soft really quick. Same thing happens with blackberries. You know, mulberries are kind of like an extended blackberry in terms of how they hold up. For me, I like to, you can make up like a really great gastrique. So that's adding acidity. So adding something like a little bit of a champagne vinegar, mulberries, it gives this really like tart, bright kind of acidic pop. And you can use that especially in savory cooking. So like a really beautiful, like dark roasted chicken breast. And then taking that kind of mulberry gastrique and kind of drizzling it over the top, it gives you that like super bright, like pop of flavor with that really kind of roasted buttery flavor.
Let me throw this at you. You take the mulberries, toss them in that vinegar you just mentioned, and then dress a salad with it. What do you think?
You can do that too, but you know, again, one of the problems is that seediness of mulberries.
Yeah. Okay.
You know, so one of the nice things about doing a gastrique is you'd add that vinegar, you'd toss them up, you'd kind of mash them up a bit, but then you could strain it through like a chinois and then get this really like fine kind of acidic, bright fruit gastrique to kind of drizzle over the top.
Thanks a lot for that call. We're going out to Mary Beth in New Berlin. Mary Beth, hi.
Hi. I have a recipe. Well, it's not exactly a recipe. It's just something I put together. It's a raspberry cordial that I've been making forever. And whatever doesn't get eaten, I take the berries and throw them in either brandy or vodka and let them sit until Christmas. And then I make a simple syrup and add that. Well, you have to mash the berries to a strainer, and then you take that liquid and add it to the simple syrup, and you have a raspberry cordial that is delicious.
I've got a neighbor who makes something like that every year with, I think, currants and raspberries sometime. That sounds great.
Yeah. In fact, actually, so we have two restaurants, Liliana's and Charlie's, and at Charlie's on Main and Oregon, we actually have a speakeasy there. So there's a bookshelf. You find the right book, and you pull it. The bookshelf lights up. You go downstairs, and you'll find me there every Friday and Saturday night making craft cocktails. And there's no recipe or anything like that. And we actually do a ton of stuff like that. We make our own limoncello. We make our own like blackberry currant. So anything that's in season, it's a great way to preserve it and be able to drink it year round because alcohol works as a great preservative. So yeah, cherry cordial is, or currant cordials, all those raspberry cordials are great.
Thanks a lot for the call and the idea, Mary Beth. We'll go next to Sherry in Spooner. Sherry, hi.
Hi, I have an idea. Thanks for taking my call. Fresh berries in ice cubes for your summer drink. And you can also put edible flowers in the ice cube. So you put a little raspberry and a beautiful violet in the ice cube tray with the water, freeze them, and then add them to your drink.
Okay. Oh, I see. You freeze the berries in ice. I get it. Okay. That sounds pretty good.
Yeah, if you're going to do that, one of my recommendations, because one of the problems is if you drink a drink really quick, then it's really just for show because the ice cubes still are surrounding the berry that's in it. But if you take those ice cubes and you make the drink ahead of time, you can actually use the drink that you're making the cubes out of in the ice cubes. The ice cube itself keeps the flavor and it keeps it from watering down.
Thanks a lot for that, Sherry. We're talking about cooking and drinking with berries. Chef Dave Heide is with us. He owns two restaurants in Wisconsin, in Fitchburg and Oregon. And Dave, before we go back to our callers, a couple things. I mean, it's easy, you know, for somebody in a household to find a good source of berries. Where do you go as a restaurateur to get those fresh local berries?
Oh, thank you so much. Great question. So one of the things we try to do, we would try to work with local purveyors again whenever possible, because really a local berry tastes better. We support local not just to support local because it's the right thing to do, but because it just tastes better. So we use Maggie's Farm. She's a local teacher, and she also has a plot of land with beautiful raspberries, black caps, white raspberries, which are beautiful. And then we also have Roots Down Farm. We have a CSA with them that we do a pickup at Charlie's, but they also have amazing strawberries during strawberry season.
And one more recipe you were going to share with us, macerated berries with, I never know how to say it, creme anglaise.
Creme anglaise, yeah.
Not so pretty close.
Taking all of your berries, take whatever berries you have, sprinkle some sugar on top, let that sugar kind of break it down. And then creme anglaise is just basically a custard that you whisk up with egg yolks and sugar and cream or milk. And it's just this kind of thickened, rich custard. Take a little bit of vanilla bean, scrape the vanilla bean out, whisk that up into a custard, and just kind of drizzle that over these kind of macerated berries. And that's one of my favorite all-time kind of summer dessert dishes.
And speaking of macerating, we heard from Gary from Iron River. He emailed to suggest adding some Cointreau. That's a
orange liqueur.
Orange liqueur, okay.
Yep.
When marinating and macerating berries, that might do what the sugar does.
Yep, absolutely. Yeah, so alcohol will break them down a little bit, but sugar is really the key to breaking down a berry really well.
Let's go back to our callers. Jenny is with us in Stone Lake. Jenny, hi.
Hi. Hi, I'm from Stone Lake, Wisconsin, and I take my berries and juice them and freeze them in like a pop bottle, a 20-ounce pop bottle, and then I take that, thaw it out, and add it to lemonade.
Okay, all right. So it's not it's freezing them, mushing them, and you end up with a frozen additive for the lemonade.
Yeah, another really good thing you can do with that too, and this works great for like if you're making stocks or juices, anything doing fresh. Take that really concentrated flavor juice that you have, and instead of in a big jug, try putting it into ice cube trays, and then you can kind of just take out a couple pops at a time, and it works out great.
Yeah, except one time I was at a friend's house looking for ice cubes for a beverage.
Mm-hmm.
I'd pull it out and almost put stock cubes in it.
Oh, no.
So warn your visitors that the ice cube trays are not all iced water. Jenny, thank you so much. That sounds great. Back to our callers. Jeremy is with us in Eau Claire. Jeremy, hi.
Hi there. I just was kind of calling. I actually, I don't know if these are summer berries or not, but there is a restaurant chain here in the northwestern part of the state called the Norskenook. And
oh, sure.
they make a lingonberry sour cream pie that is so ridiculous. I probably make the trip from Eau Claire to Osseo a little too often for that one.
Yeah, Norskenook is pretty famous. Lingonberries, we hear that's like a Scandinavian cuisine, right?
Yep, absolutely. Yeah, I love them for their tartness. You know, they've got this really beautiful, like, fresh tartness to them. So that's actually one of the things that putting them in, like, sour cream or any kind of dairy really helps with. It takes away some of that acidity and kind of lets the sweetness shine through.
That's lingonberries, which I don't think I could pick out of a lineup, honestly. I've also encountered in the wild huckleberries a couple times, which are fantastic. Have you ever worked with those or any other, you know, less commonly spotted berries?
I haven't personally worked with huckleberries before, but I definitely know of them. You know, what we tend to get in the restaurant is things that are more readily available. Things like mushrooms and stuff, we tend to see some really fun exotic varieties that come in from like local mushroom hunters. But for berries, a lot of people that come and kind of promote them to us, it's more the like the raspberries, the black caps, the currants, the more like traditional berries and fruits.
Let's go back. We've got time for another caller or two. Mark is with us in Winona, Minnesota. Mark, hi.
Hi, how you doing?
Good. What do you got for us, Mark?
Well, about 45 years ago in a restaurant called the Prime Rib in Baltimore, I was introduced to the strawberries that you can mash in your tongue, quartered, put it in a brandy snipper, and then an ounce of very high-end orange liqueur. Made a fantastic dessert after a heavy meal.
Oh, it's like a nice light dessert berries could be the heart of, Dave.
Oh, God, yeah. I love... especially like he said, drizzling it with a little bit of, he said orange liqueur, I'm guessing like Cointreau, Grand Marnier. I mean, any of those are great, a great aperitif and a great finishing.
Let's go to one more caller. Laura is with us in Twin Lakes. Laura, hi.
Hi. I wanted to call and mention cranberries. One way I've had cranberries is with salmon. So you can take and you can, say fry up a salmon or grill a salmon and make cranberries with a little bit of sugar, saute that until it's like a sauce. Oh, it's unexpectedly fabulous.
Laura, thanks a lot for the call. It seems like you don't expect it to be great, Dave. You're a little skeptical.
I'm sure everyone has their own flavor profiles. I think sometimes, you know, one of the things with cranberry is that it is such a super tart flavor that it tends to kind of overpower everything that you put it with. And so sometimes if you have something that's really fresh, like salmon, taking something that's a little too bright and a little too acidic can tend to overpower the freshness of the salmon.
Can you mellow out a tart flavor like a cranberry or a tart?
Put a bunch of butter in it, like we talked about before, mounting it in. So like when I make my cranberry relish come Thanksgiving time, I always finish it with butter and it ends up just mellowing out the tartness a little bit. So yes, you can technically do it, but yeah, they're things.
Butter can make friends of any two dishes, it sounds like. Chef Dave, thanks a lot for joining us today. Appreciate it.
Of course. So happy to be here.
That's Chef Dave Heide. He runs two restaurants in Wisconsin, Liliana's in Fitchburg and Charlie's on Main in Oregon. He joins today to talk about great recipes for using those fresh summer berries. Still time for you to share your favorite berry recipes, maybe even a picture of the berry patch in your backyard if you've got one. You can do that on the Ideas Network Facebook page. Let us know your favorite berry-related dish. It's National Mac and Cheese Day tomorrow for some reason. It seems like they have a national day for every food. I think today is French Fry Day. Sunday is ice cream or something. But let's stick with that mac and cheese for a moment and ask Chef Dave to hang around for a bonus round here. You've done some wacky stuff with mac and cheese.
Wacky stuff. Heck yeah. We do at Liliana's, we do a black truffle, Newski's bacon, RP's pasta, and then we have a blend of three different cheeses, Hook's three-year cheddar, Car Valley Menage, and Farmer John provolone that all go together with a little bit of heavy cream, and it is pretty divine.
You had me at black truffle, bacon, three kinds of cheese, and heavy cream, Dave.
Well, and then on top of that, we also top it with an andouille crust. So we take andouille sausage, we slice it super thin, we toast it in the oven, then we grind it up, and then we mix it with panko breadcrumbs, and then we roast that in the oven again with a little bit of butter, and then we drizzle that on top and then bake it to finish it. So it's now, got that crispy.
That sounds really fancy. For home cooking, do you sometimes go for like a more simple mac and cheese, or do you like to jazz it up one way or another?
Oh, yeah, no. So you know what? It's one of the funny misconceptions about chefs. Everyone thinks that when we go home, we eat really fancy, but when you're around fancy food all day, some of our favorite foods are like Velveeta mac and cheese or like cheese pizza or pepperoni. Like sometimes the most basic simple things are things that we crave because we're not around it all day.
Well, Dave, thanks for helping us celebrate tomorrow's National Mac and Cheese Day.
I'm so happy to, man.
This is Central Time on the Ideas Network.